Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us. And you guys know the catchphrase, the most scintillating hour of finance radio. Darren didn't laugh this time. We're sitting here talking. Darren's getting ready. I'm jealous. Darren's getting ready for a little European vacation with the wife. And I was telling him, you got to get this stuff in, man, before you have kids. It's a game changer. I call them dream crushers. I've got three dream crushers. No,
that's sweet.
I know. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? Funny story. You want to hear something funny? We're going to get into the market update, but this was just really funny. So for those of you listening to the show, I don't think I announced it. Usually I do, but typically 3 out of 4 weeks, I bring up one of the kids, right? Darren knows this. And last week, it was my daughter's chance to come. And so she accompanied me, and, you know, then we do a little daddy-daughter date afterwards, go out for lunch, kind of make a day out of it. And actually, there's a lot of big things that happened last week. We took her to Dick's. She had her first Dick's drive-in burger. It's a big day, right? These are Hallmark moments. Anyway, had a great interview last week with Bill Fleckenstein. Always love having him on. And my daughter brought her notebook. I don't know if you noticed it, Darren. Did you see the notebook she brought in? Yeah. So, you know, she's coloring, right? Doing her thing. At least that's what I think. So we get home and my wife's putting stuff away and going through it. And she pulls out my daughter's notebook. And my daughter wasn't drawing while she was listening to the show. Now, she's 8 years old. She was taking notes. It was Zach's interview with Bill. And one of the pieces that she wrote down, one of her notes, was negative intestates, like interest rates, right? Misspelled. And the Fed. And anyway, it's hilarious. And if you want to see it, I took a picture of it and posted it on our Twitter feed. And she showed me up. I think at last count, it had like 110 likes, like five retweets, right? You know, I'm not a huge social media guy. I'm on Twitter mostly for the research, but I start dying laughing because of all the stuff I've put out there, it's never come close. Her notes went viral. I mean, there were people jumping in all over the world, just like, this is so awesome. Hilarious. So she became, we're making social media celebrities on this show. Thanks to Darren. But anyway, you guys can check it out. If you want to go to @KYRRadio on Twitter, that's our handle. We post a lot of different economic stuff. You can see me going back and forth with different friends of the show, other money managers. And I am not a social media guy. I've said it before. Twitter's the first engagement I've ever done on social media, and it is invaluable. There's so much good information, and talk to other guys that are managing money and share ideas and roll things back. But if just for a laugh, go to our Twitter page, and it was just posted a few days ago, so you might have to scroll down a little bit to see it, but just too funny. So anyway, without further ado, we're going to get into things. And as always, you know, I was thinking about this and just saying, thinking, you know, I want to recap what it is that we're doing, right? Obviously, we're on here to connect with people, and it's a form of marketing, but the other side of it is really trying to educate. And what we want to do, The world of finance can get so esoteric and so, I don't know, intellectually inbred, if that's a proper way to put it. And then you get involved in these conversations with these finance people who are brilliant. And I'm sure you guys can relate, because it's not exclusive to the financial industry. But it really just turns into a highbrow intellectual contest about who's smartest, right? And you know, to use the same word again, because it's just a perfect description. But you know, the esoteric language and the insider language, and look at me, I'm so smart. And then they all just repeat the same thing over and over, right? It's just an echo chamber. I always laugh when you get a research report out from the big banks, because I just roll my eyes. I'm like, yeah, I've read it before. Like, oh, you've read this one? No, I haven't read that one. But they're all saying the exact same thing, because God forbid they have a variant perception, to steal the term that Mr. Jonathan Tepper, who's been on the show before, uses for his firm. But right, it's just be a part of the crowd. It reminds me of that quote from John Maynard Keynes, which is, it is better to fail conventionally than to succeed unconventionally. Now, obviously, we do not subscribe to that. We do things very differently. Our show is different. But that's the way the financial industry is. And what we attempt to do is to tackle these highbrow financial issues and break them down and synthesize them in a way that you as listeners, and then even me, it's a great exercise for me, you know, can process it, right? And understand it in a workable fashion, not just these three-line quips you throw out. Well, you know, the spreads on CDS is blew out, and what that means is you kind of, and I just roll my eyes, because I'm sitting there going, you're just reciting something. There's no synthesis. It's like, I think it was Mark Twain that said something like, look, if you can't describe a complex situation or a complex topic, and I could be butchering it, maybe it's not Twain, but you know, if you can't describe it in two sentences, you don't really understand it. If you can't describe it in plain language, you don't understand it. Because we can all memorize things and spit them out, and quite honestly, that's exactly what you're hearing in the media. A lot of these people don't even know what they're saying. Listening to people talk about inversions on rate curves, I heard Jim Cramer. You know, despite me bringing him up all the time, I've said this before, I don't disdain Jim Cramer, and I've offered this disclaimer before. But it's a name that everybody knows, and it's really helpful to point out, some of the ridiculous stuff that comes out. And I listened to his description of the rate or the yield curve and why it's inverted. And, he's just wrong. It's not my opinion. It's factual. Look, the reason that rate curves invert before recessions is, I mean, there's a lot of different things involved, and it's kind of one of those mysteries. But the basic aspect of why you see rate inversion is because higher yielding products with longer durations, there's two ways you make money off bonds, right? You sit there and hold it, and you collect the money, right? The interest payments, the dividends, or excuse me, the coupons. Or you use them tactically, which is what we do. And I've told you guys this before. You guys know my thoughts on bonds in general, in a retail portfolio, right? We got to add those qualifications in there. We got to qualify it that way. But, you know, as a buy and hold strategy, I think it's going to be a disaster for most retail clients, especially the way that they own them. If you own individual bonds, it's not as bad. I still think your relative return and risk setup and everything like that on a CD, you can get CDs that are paying 2.5 to 3. You might have to go out 5 years, but again, on a risk reward basis, it's hard to make that recommendation. But remember, we talk about that relationship with bonds and interest rates. So when interest rates fall, which they always do in a recession, I shouldn't say always, but virtually always. And so if you've got a 30-year bond yielding, you know, let's say 30-year U.S. Treasury, I think it's at 2.9, 2.8, something like that. I look at the 10-year mostly. But that bond has got more runway. It's got more. The rate on that bond can fall further, right? And so there's more upside gain, not from the interest being paid, but from the underlying bond itself increasing in value. And I think the biggest aspect of that rate inversion phenomenon that occurs is that you get investors jumping out to the highest yield, longest duration bond, which is, now remember, when interest rates rise, the longer duration, so a 30-year bond is going to be more impacted by rising interest rates. It's going to lose more money than a 10-year bond because you're locked in longer, right? Now, conversely, when interest rates drop, a 30-year bond that's paying a higher yield, you know, let's say the 30-year bond right now is at, the 10-year is at like 2.42, wouldn't that be something? 2.42, and I think, like I said, the 30-year is probably more like 2.6, 2.7. Okay, but let's just call it 2.5 and 3%. The 10-year pays 2.5, the 30-year pays 3. Just ease of conversation, round numbers. And when interest rates go down, that 30-year bond has got, right, it's got further to fall. And so there's greater upside potential. Just like it can lose more if interest rates go up, it can make more. And if bond investors or even stock investors or money managers think that we're going into a recession or there's an economic slowdown, the chance of rates going up is almost zero, right? Because rates virtually always go down in recessions. So they're no longer worried about what we call, you know, duration risk, right? Losing money if interest rates go up because they're reading recessionary indicators. And so then they'll go out and they will buy. If they think interest rates are going down, then they're going to buy. They're going to go out as long as they can. They're going to buy that 30-year bond because it's going to pay them 3% as opposed to 2.5. Because they're no longer worried about rates going up, right? So you just have a higher demand for longer duration bonds. Therefore, the value of longer duration bonds gets down there to parity or even dips below. So you end up with a scenario. Now, this doesn't typically happen with the 10 and 30. This is more of a phenomenon that you see with the 10s and 20, the 10s and 2s, the 2s and 5s, things like that. But we're going to use the 10 and 30 because that's what most people are most familiar with. So what we call inversion in the yield curve is when the 30-year bond is paying less interest than the 10-year bond, right? It's inverted. And the reason we call that inverted is because we all know this in our mind, right? If we go in to buy a car at a car dealership, they're going to give us several different financing options. They'll do you 0% for 5 years or 2.99 at 7 or 3.99 at, I was laughing. A little side note here. I went in to buy my wife's car. This was 2 years ago. They offered me 120-month financing, a 10-year car loan. I do this all the time. I'm an economic wonk, right? I'm a nerd. I didn't even know there were 10-year car loans available. Anyway, stunning, right? So we know that the longer we go out, the higher interest rate we got to pay, right? So that's kind of that weird anomaly where that longer duration bond, the 30-year, 20 years longer duration, is now paying less interest than the 10-year. So that's a curve inversion. And like I said, that's just basically a factor of supply and demand. It's people not being worried about rates going up because they think there's a recessionary, you know, environment that's occurring or developing. And so they want to make as much money as they can. And that's what happens. That's rate inversion. And so anyway, so getting back to the original point, you hear these people pontificate about things and you sit there and scratch your head and go, did you even read that or did you even research that before you said it? And look, I'm not trying to put myself up there as this paragon of truth and somebody that never makes mistakes. We do. But it just always shocks me. And we're going to get into this more. We've talked about it before on the show. We have a similar setup with a stock that I think is interesting. And we're going to we talk about value investing all the time. And there's a perfect stock. I'm not going to recommend it. Okay. I want to just say that we don't give recommendations. If you've heard the show before, we can't do that. A lot of liability, all that other kind of stuff. And not only that, but we don't want to give away the secret sauce, right? But we're going to get into this particular stock. And I think it's a perfect example of what a value stock looks like, a value setup. And along with examining it on the valuation, you know, basis, on the valuation platform, we also want to look at it as an illustration of how much bad information there is out there. And how just because, and this applies to me too, just because someone is sitting in front of a television camera or a microphone does not mean, A, that they know what they're talking about, or B, that they have done their homework. And even though I do this for a living and I do it every single day, I find myself doing the same thing. If I see a guy being interviewed or I hear a guy on the radio talking about a matter and giving an opinion that is different than mine, I immediately assume that I'm wrong, that there's something I've missed. Because we kind of have that baked into our psyche, right? If you're on the radio, if you're on television, and like I said, it applies to me too, we're gonna assign some credibility to that. And this illustrates why guys like me and everybody in the industry will tell you, if you are managing your own money, be careful. There have been countless studies done on this that for a variety of different reasons, none of which involve intellect, okay? People managing their own money tend to do much worse. And there's a variety of different reasons. We could probably do a show on that. But just keep that in mind. And but if you are managing your own money, do nothing off of a recommendation. Okay? That's the other reason. Even if we could do individual recommendations on the show, I probably wouldn't, because I think that that's useless. I think it's much more important to talk about the process, to talk about what it is that we, you know, the ways in which we evaluate a stock, the methods that we should be paying, you know, that we should be using, the things we should be paying attention to. I think that's much more valuable information, right? So anyway, but just, and we've talked about it before, a lot of charlatans out there, and that's a word that's got so much negative connotation to it. I don't even mean it like that. I mean it by the definition, somebody putting themselves up to be an expert that doesn't know what they're talking about. And like I said, you know, and if you guys think that I've erred on something, or if you've got a topic you'd like me to discuss or revisit or clarify because you think I'm wrong on something, feel free to email us. I mean it. I've had people do it before, and usually it's a misunderstanding, but there have been a couple times where the person's been right. I'm fallible. I can make mistakes too. Just ask my wife. Anyway, so let's get into it. First of all, I almost forgot. Darren, you don't even know this. This is big news. There were a lot of guys that wrote about the financial collapse, right? The Lehman Brothers thing, the whole financial crisis, all that kind of stuff. The best-selling book that was written by an insider, so a guy that was actually inside of it when it happened, best-selling, best description, was a guy by the name of Lawrence McDonald, or Larry McDonald. He goes by Larry. And I had a 40-minute phone call with Larry this morning, and we booked him for next week. And Larry ran the trading desk at Lehman Brothers. He was the head of their proprietary trading desk. And he was there during the whole process. And he saw the collapse coming months before. It just fascinating story. I'm reading the book. I'm working through it. I'll probably be done with it by the end of the weekend. And I can't believe I missed it, but it is certainly the preeminent book on the financial collapse. So first of all, it's going to be guy's a brilliant guy. Here's the other reason why I like him. And I've said this before. We like guys there, and this goes right into how we started the whole segment here. We like guys that don't have these big egos and aren't sitting themselves up there as, oh, look at me, I'm the expert, listen to me talk about all this, you know. I like guys that are humble, that are in it for just the work, that can talk in plain English and all that kind of stuff. Larry's one of the only guys I know that has a background like mine, where he actually started on the retail side. He didn't come from an Ivy League background. He didn't work at a hedge fund on Wall Street. He had to come up, he did go to Dartmouth, so geez. but anyway, he wasn't plugged in. He was a bit of an outsider. And I just see that as a valuable experience because, like I was saying earlier, the financial world can be an incredible echo chamber. So the name of the book is A Colossal Failure of Common Sense. It is an inside story about what happened to Lehman Brothers. And if you aren't familiar with the term Lehman Brothers, it was one of the most storied firms on the street. It went down. And we look at it now, and, you know, the term Lehman Brothers is like a punchline, but at the time, Lehman Brothers was one of those banks that we all in the industry that, no, not Lehman. Lehman can't go down. That's what happens to small savings and loan or regional banks. Not Lehman. They're one of the big guys on the street. And so Larry was running their proprietary trading desk, which, funny enough, Lehman failed. That proprietary trading desk he was running had a $2 billion profit in 2008, the year they failed. Anyway, it's fascinating. So we've got that great interview coming up next Friday. Well, you guys will hear it Saturday, of course. And but between now and then, go get the book. Go get the background so you can really know what's going on. And it's he talks about his family. Even for me, some of these books can be really dry, even for guys like me who are information wonks. It's a great read. He talks about how he grew up, his family. Just a great book. It makes it really entertaining. And he explains it. And he explains the insanity of it. And I think that everybody should read it to understand how these things happen. How common sense just goes out the window. How people get what I refer to as money eyes, right? Where they're blinded. Greed just takes over. And they leave their common sense on the side. So anyway, we've got that coming up. So we've gone on long here. Now I want to get into the market update. So, look, not a lot's changed. More of the same. We're going back and forth. The market loves these trade deal agreements. And I've said it before. Look, I think we'll get a trade deal. I don't think it's going to mean much. I think that we're experiencing some financial pressure, certainly economic. The market doesn't seem to care. But market hasn't really cared about anything for 10 years. So, and, you know, that's kind of what happens when you've got the most expensive, most overvalued market in human history. But having said that, this market just loves these Chinese trade rumors. It's almost like once we clear this China trade thing up, it's just to the moon, baby. Guys, here's the thing. Anybody that's spinning that right now hasn't done their homework. Again, let's get back to it. This Chinese slowdown started in 2016. Okay. And it's been happening ever since. The trade war didn't start till what, a year ago? The quote unquote trade war. Do I think if they get some type of resolution, it's going to hurt things economically? No, but it's not this white knight that's going to come save economic conditions. Economic conditions are deteriorating all over the world. Like I said, I think the trade situation has something to do with that. And we're going to get into that a little bit later. We're going to talk about the global economy. That's going to be the final segment that we talk about because there's some more data points that have come out. But, you know, like I said, it's not horrible, but everywhere I keep listening, even on this radio station, I hear people saying, oh, the economy's great. Yeah, that's just not true. It's not bad. It's great compared to other places right now. But we are not steaming along, and that's one of our biggest concerns. For instance, you've got the market rallying back to all-time highs where you had record earnings in 2017 and 2018. Well, we know for a fact we're not going to have those same earnings this year. Earnings were up. What was it, like 21% or 23% or something like that in 2017, 2018? And they're hoping to get earnings growth at like 3% this year? So the idea that the market is rallying back to the all-time highs or attempting to, like I said, there's some big leaps of faith going on there because the underlying fundamentals do not justify it. They just don't. It's not an opinion. It's fact. Treasuries continue to do well. Again, that's a recessionary signal. You got the 10-year right now trading at 2.41. It got as low as 2.35. You know, guys, not that long ago, everybody was worried that rates were going through the through the ceiling, and the 10-year bumped up against 3.25. That's a big pullback. And when you see rates dropping like that, and it's not driven by the Fed in there buying up everything that isn't bolted down, that tells you that the market is sitting there going, oh, look, this isn't good. So you've had rates going down, treasuries going up in value, and stocks going to the moon at the same time. Something's got to give. And in the industry, we call the bond money the smart money. Again, we could do a whole show on that. But typically, bonds lead stocks. It's one of the foundational aspects. So if you've got bonds moving one way and stocks moving the other, and they're telling different stories, the vast majority of the time, bonds are going to be proven right. Just the way things work. Now, this cycle has been drastically different for a variety of different reasons. So having said that, I would not be surprised if this is a head fake and that stocks were right. Just because stocks are completely detached from reality. So whatever. And just because they're detached from reality does not mean that they're about ready to fall off a cliff. And we'll talk more about that in that global segment that we're going to do. But I will say this, though. And again, this isn't ominous. This is just me making an observation. I have seen some of the strangest market action and price movements. And this is a little bit anecdotal. But I have seen some of the strangest action and movements over the last 2 to 3 weeks, even the last month, than I have seen in my entire career. Just odd. I wouldn't say ominous. Just very odd. Very odd. A lot of correlations that have broken down. just odd. And so we just very much think caution is still there. Again, I know people would be like, Zach, you've been saying that forever. Okay, but let's go back and take a look at things, guys. We're basically flat for the last 15, 16 months. Okay, so it's not like we've been saying to batten down the hatches and play it conservative and the market's just, rallied like crazy. There is still a lot of reasons to be not nervous, not fearful, but just careful, just cautious. And I think the vast majority of almost every retail investor I run into is way overexposed. And they think, based on listening to the media and listening to everybody, that, hey, we're it's an economic resurgence. Look, like I said, things are better here than they are other places. This is not a ripping economy. It's just not. And there are a ton of warning signs. But Larry Kudlow, financial advisor for Trump, came out and said something today. Anyway, I'm cheating myself. We're going to get to that in the last segment. We've gone over China trade. What else are we watching here? I just think it's all about risk management. We don't want to panic and sell stocks, but it's all about risk management. If you don't have a risk management strategy, guys, you need to call us or you need to give somebody else a call, because there are many ways to reduce your risk, lower your fees, and not give up upside. Okay, and the way I want you to think about it is it's like a football game. If you've got 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter and you've got a 34-point lead, are you going to be dropping back, throwing Hail Marys? No. Okay, well, you're here now at 10 years into the longest bull market in U.S. history with record stock valuations. Could it go up? Yes, but don't be greedy. It's the old adage, bears make money, bulls make money, pigs get slaughtered. Don't be greedy. You've had a great run. Here's the other thing. I think a lot of people have the misconception that if you come to us or somebody like us that's advocating disciplined, responsible investing, that you're going to miss out on the upside. Not true. That bond replacement strategy we have goes up with the stock market. So even though we're putting you in a safer portfolio, if we're wrong and you're right, and this is the beginning of an economic resurgence, and I'll take that bet all day long, by the way, but if you're right, great. Your portfolio with us can do better, way better. Remember I was telling you our 50-50 strategy with our bond replacement and stocks, 50-50 portfolio in 2017 was up after net of fees, was up more than 15%. Equivalent stock bond portfolio in that same year was, 8.5, 9. So we're actually going to give you more upside, significantly more, because bonds are dead money. Just telling you. So if you want a risk review, if you want to know that you've got a risk management strategy in place, if you want more leverage to the upside, right? You just want to do it more protected. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can email us, go to Know Your Risk Radio, go to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. We've got a contact us thing on our website. You can just go in there and email us, say that you want a portfolio review. We can do it over the phone. We can even do it over email, guys. And, like I said, Dory's a sponsor of the, or endorses the firm, and he wouldn't do it if it was some kind of shady sales technique or something like that. But we're really simple. I was with a client last night. This is kind of funny, Darren. You'll like this. I was with a prospect last night, a guy that called and wanted to, had a great chat. I was there for, I think it was at his house for like 4 hours. And we're going over things, and he said something like, oh, well, I'm not ready yet. And I looked at him, I go, I didn't even bring sales material, man. I'm glad you're not ready, because I'm not either. And he kind of gave me a weird look, and I said, look, we tell people, we don't do arm twisting. We do educating. If after the educational process, they you want to work with us, great. If not, we're not going to call you and bug you. We have a better way to do it. We really do. And we're going to show it to you. If you get it, great. Most clients do. If you don't, we're not for you. It's that simple. So give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Set up a phone consultation. You can get a free. You can get the free booklet. You can set up a meeting where we do an in-depth portfolio review. We can go back and forth over email. You can talk to it, whatever. Also, go to the website. Got a lot of resources there. We have a 17-page white paper done by a professor of finance at Yale. Also worked with Milton Friedman at the University of Chicago talking about that bond replacement strategy. It's all right there, guys. And like I said, you can also follow us at KYR Radio on Twitter. Anyway, we got to get rolling. Got a lot of stuff to get to today. So stick with us. We're going to be right back. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
What does outside-the-box investing really look like? Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management, and see a side-by-side comparison of your current portfolio versus one Zach would recommend. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com.
I have to tell you, what a relief for my wife and me when we got signed up for long-term care coverage. The more I learned about the fact that nearly 3 out of 4 of us will need some form of long-term care in our retirement, there are so many issues at play. For some people, they can't afford it and they become a burden on their friends and family. For others, you do have money set aside, but it wipes out everything that you've saved. And maybe most importantly, it's about having a plan so that all your children have to do is carry out your wishes. It's not a burden on them. And that's why I love the advice we got from Brian Ott and 525 Advisors. We started by going to one of Brian's free classes, and that's what I recommend you do to find out about all the different plans they offer. Brian does have a few classes coming up this month. Seats are limited, so sign up now at 525longtermcare.com. You'll get a free copy of Brian's book, too. Go to 525longtermcare.com, 525longtermcare.com.
Volatile markets are never fun, but it provides the opportunity to see exactly how much risk you're exposed to. Like Warren Buffett always says, when the tide goes out, you find out who's been swimming without their trunks on. Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Chances are the defense portion of your portfolio, the bonds, got hit right along with your stocks. So what do you do? Look, safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. By using our bond replacement strategy, our clients have actually increased their returns while being insured against loss and all the while lowering their fees. Call now and get your free copy of our brand new booklet, Common Sense Investing, and learn how to protect your retirement against loss but still participate in market gains. Call 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Or go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, we are back. Got a good rally going on in markets. A little bit hotter than when I walked into the studio here. Dow's up 188. S&P is up 17.8 or 0.63%. Dow's up 0.73%. NASDAQ up 0.78. Surprise, surprise. People just love that tech, baby. Good golly. There's so much. Oh, man. These crazy tech valuations. It really is like a redux of 99. It's different. They've got revenue, but they don't got any profit. They've got no cash flow. They're going into debt to buy back stock. It is an absolute bubble in the tech world. A lot of really exciting technology. Cool stuff going on, but none of them can make any profit. And the funny thing is, you sit down with retail investors, that's all they want to talk about is tech stocks. Whew. Anyway, okay, let's get into it. Talk about one of my favorites. We haven't talked about this one in a while. I'm kind of juiced. Anyway, a video came out on Real Vision. We had the founder of Real Vision on there. It's a financial news subscription service that you can sign up to. And it's, you know, we talk about charlatans. You have no journalists on there. It's all guys that have been in the industry. So you're listening to guys that are currently managing money, have managed money, established names, talking about the real economic situations, the real breakdowns. It's invaluable. You can go to find it at realvision.com. Anyway, they had a video on there about Tesla where they talked to the Tesla bulls, the Tesla bears, And it wasn't nearly as in-depth as I wanted it to be. It wasn't as long as I wanted it to be. But I think it's a great, to understand the whole Tesla debate, or if you're long Tesla right now, you should watch it. It's worth the, if you own Tesla stock and you're long Tesla stock, you should watch it. And again, one of the things that kills me about the Tesla debate is the people that are long Tesla that like Tesla, I obviously don't, but what they do almost universally is they attack anybody that's not a bull, right? They attack anybody that isn't supporting the stock, that doesn't think it can go, you know, significantly higher, that don't think it's the greatest thing in the world. And let me just tell you something. I've done that before. It's a huge mistake. Okay. And when people try to criminalize short sellers, people betting against stocks, it's crazy. Okay. Short sellers are a phenomenal source of information. And you know why that is? Because first of all, short selling it's an art and it's a really tough way to invest. Okay. And because of that, you barely see any retail people in it, you know, casual investors, because they don't understand it. It's risky. And here's why it's risky. When you short sell a stock, you make money when the stock goes down. Okay. And the way you do it is you sell a stock that you don't technically own. Okay. You sell it. And if you sell that stock at $100, you borrow it from somebody. So you're borrowing the stock when the price is at $100 and you're selling it. You're keeping the money. Now, you owe that stock back because you borrowed it from somebody. So what you're hoping is the price of that stock drops to, let's say, 50. You take the money that you used from buying or from selling the stock at 100. You buy back the same number of shares for 50 that you borrowed. So you pay back the stock and you keep the spread, right? So the difference, because let's call it 10 shares. You sold 10 shares at $100. You got $1,000. But you still owe the 10 shares back. Price of the stock drops to 50. You buy 10 shares, give that guy his stock. 10 shares at $50 is $500. So you spend $500 to buy the stock. You give the guy his 10 shares of stock back and you keep the other $500. Okay, that's a short sale. And that's how you make money in shorts, okay? But the money you can make selling a stock short is limited. The max you can make is if the stock drops to zero. That's the max you can make. You know, can't go negative, right? But your loss is unlimited. What happens if that $100 stock goes to $1,000? You're on the hook for it. Now you got to buy 10 shares back at $1,000, which means you got paid $1,000, but it's going to cost you $10,000 to buy the stock back. Because of that, short sellers tend to be some of the most informed investors in the market. And to laugh at them or scoff them, especially the ones that have good track records at shorting, do it at your own peril. And look, I have been long stocks that people have been short. It's frustrating, but you need to listen to it. And all the Tesla bulls out there come up with all these conspiracy theories about why people are trying to damage a stock and they want to hurt Tesla. First of all, let's handle a misnomer here. Shorting a stock and driving the price of a stock down does nothing to harm the underlying company. It's a complete fallacy. It's a myth. Makes the price of their stock go down, but that doesn't affect a company. If a company is making $1 billion a year and their stock gets hit by 30% for no reason, for some malicious short seller, it doesn't mean they're going to make less profit next year. It doesn't hurt the company. So just be very careful of that. So getting into Tesla, there's a lady named Kathy Wood that runs a fund called ARK Investments, and she's been one of the biggest Tesla bulls, a proponent of it. She's got some pretty funny financial models where she thinks Tesla is worth $4,000 a share, I think is her price target. She said she's not going to sell stock till it hits $1 trillion market cap. Well, hey, she could be right. I still am stupefied that people would trust her with money. Somebody that says that. There's so many unknowns, right? It's just crazy. And we've talked in the show before about the Amazoning of the economy. So one of the things that we see that's interesting and unique about this market is you have all of these companies that are not small cap companies that are worth $15, $20, $40, $50 billion. Or in Netflix's case, $150 billion. Salesforce.com, $150 billion. I think they're around $120, $130 billion. Anyway, these massive cap companies that have negative cash flow. And we saw this developing several years ago, but we started referring it to the Amazoning of the market. And the reason we said that is Now that Amazon has had this great success, everybody's going to start extrapolating that onto all these other companies and saying, look, Amazon burned cash for 15 years or whatever it was, and look at them. Almost like it's the approach to take to build a company. Look, Amazon is an exception to the rule. And I'm going to break down why. And the reason why I bring this up is in this video about Tesla, the Tesla bulls argument is that Tesla's just like Amazon. That was literally the first thing out of Cathie Wood's mouth. And I just laughed. Here's why. First of all, Amazon is a retail, is a web-based retailer. Okay. So if we think about Amazon's business model, let's think about it in terms of turnstiles, right? Like at a Subway. Amazon builds turnstiles. That's their cost. Okay. And then people go through the turnstile, and every person that goes through the turnstile, Amazon gets paid. So every increased person that goes through that turnstile, they are driving the cost of that turnstile down, right? Because that turnstile is making more and more money. Eventually that has the turnstile paid off and you've just got this cash machine. Okay. That's a really rude, simple way to describe it, but I think it's an apt description. Okay. To compare that to a manufacturer of durable goods, think refrigerators, cars, things of that nature, things that you don't just open the package on, use it and throw it away. It's durable. That cost an average of, you know, $50,000 to $80,000. To compare that to a web-based retailer is insanity. And here's why. A manufacturer of durable goods cannot make money without a capital investment, meaning every car that Tesla sells, they have to buy material for, right? They got to pay people to screw on the wheels. They got to pay people to install the transmission. They cannot realize revenue without a capital investment. More importantly, the margins they're working on, and this is evident in the fact that they've burned something like, I don't know what the total number is, but billions of dollars a year, somewhere between $2 and $5 billion a year. Their margins are a lot skinnier than Amazon's. Now, as they produce more cars, their costs will get lower incrementally, but the material and the labor costs what it costs. I hope you're following me here. Because Amazon realizes the cost up front and then just keeps making money off it. Tesla continues to have to keep rolling things over. They got to take the money from this. They got to reuse it to build another car and they got to sell it. So, you know, at any given time, Tesla has way more of their money invested in the build process than they've got on hand. That's just the way manufacturing works. And when you talk about a manufacturer being able to maintain negative cash flows, I'm just here to tell you that doesn't work. I've done it. I was a CFO for a manufacturing company that built $150,000 oil tanker trailers. Cash management was everything. And I've just never seen anything like it. I've never seen anything like it where you have a car. According to the market cap on Tesla is pushing $50 billion. So the market is sitting there saying that Tesla is more valuable than GM and Tesla is burning $3 billion a year. It's crazy. But I listen to the bulls because I want to sit there and go, what is it that I missed? And then I listen to the bulls and I go, nothing. It's even scarier than I think. You think this is the next Amazon. It couldn't be more different. It can't be the next Amazon. It doesn't have the advantages of Amazon's business model. It's just stupefying to me. And I think it's a hallmark of how crazy this has all gotten. You've got companies out there with $25 billion market caps that are making $2 billion a year, revenue of $2 billion a year, burning cash, negative cash flow. Can't make a profit, haven't proved that they can do that. And their stock's trading at 12 times. It's just insane. And it's all over the place. And look, I don't have any insight as to when it stops, guys. I'm just telling you it's going to. And when it does, it's going to be ugly. So anyway, there's my rant on Tesla. We got to run. I got more to get to. I went over in the first segment. Shocker. Happens every week. Darren's rolling his eyes. Anyway, we're going to be right back. But as always, guys, if you're seeing this and you're concerned and you want to know, because there's the other big caveat in there, right? We got the Federal Reserve. If they keep cutting rates and keep pumping money into the market, which I don't want to give away our last segment, we're going to talk about that. But they can keep, theoretically, they keep pushing asset prices higher. So we've got a solution. We got a solution to manage your risk. If the markets keep going up, you go up with it. But if they don't and they crash, which will inevitably happen, you got a chair, right? It's like musical chairs. You got a chair. And by the way, we're going to cut your costs. Lower management fees. If that interests you and you see some of these concerns and you're scratching your head going, this doesn't marry up, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. Sign up for the podcast. Get our free newsletter. Get the booklet. You guys know the drill. Anyway, we'll be right back. Thanks for listening. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with my financial advisor, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. And Zach, what I love about you guys is your focus on risk management.
Well, Dory, we're a fiduciary and a holistic retirement planning firm. Our goals are simple. Get our clients the highest returns with the least amount of risk and cost.
I know they're normally used for safety, but how risky are bonds right now?
If a significant portion of your retirement portfolio is in cash or bonds, that just doesn't work in this low interest rate environment on the verge of inflation. You need a bond replacement strategy.
I gotta tell you, you have to read it. Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn that bond replacement strategy, learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, we are back. I'm kind of coming to the realization this should be a two-hour show. The only show that I felt like we had enough time to really cover everything was that two-hour show we did with Dave Cullen. Anyway. Okay, so we're a little condensed. I'm going to combine these last two segments because I think they are two important things to get to. First of all, we talk about value stocks all the time. What is a value stock? Okay. And again, I want to reiterate something. This is not, I feel like I'm kind of skating on thin ice here because this is not a recommendation. I do not know what your financial needs are. I'm not telling you that we've bought it. I'm not telling you that we've sold it. I'm telling you that I want to use this as an illustration to show you something. Okay. So I think we've talked about this stock on the show before. Tailored Brands. For those of you at home, you can go to the ticker symbol and type in TLRD. Okay. Now, I want to illustrate value investing and give you an idea of what we mean. Okay. First of all, let's give a global overview of Tailored Brands. Tailored Brands is Men's Warehouse. They own Men's Warehouse. They also bought in 2013. They bought for way too much money. Their number one competitor, Joseph A. Bank. If you don't know Joseph A. Bank, you do. Buy one suit, get three free, right? They bought them. And they own a couple other retailers, K&G and Moores, which are kind of like TJ Maxx style retailers in Canada. And then they also own Joseph Aboud Clothing, which is a really nice, really, really nice, expensive type of suit that used to sell at Nordstrom's. Men's Warehouse bought it out. Then they became the conglomeration known as Tailored Brands. Their stock in 2013, I want to say, was $65. Today, it's trading at just right around $8. Okay, the problem started when they got rid of George Zimmer, the founder of the company, who really knew what he was doing and built a monster in the retail industry. You know, you like the way you look, I guarantee it. Okay, remember Men's Warehouse? So, they forced him out because he was old and outdated and no longer knew the game. And they had to bring in new blood, smart people that really have things figured out, right? And he was against the acquisition of Joseph A. Bank. They got in a fight. Zimmer lost. They kicked him out. And it's kind of a shady story. His mentee, the guy he brought along, kind of turncoated on him. And he got the executive seat. He got to be CEO. Doug McEwen, I believe his name is. And so he orchestrated the buyout of Joseph A. Bank. He paid $1.6 billion for Joseph A. Bank. Just nonsense. The guy is incompetent. He had no clue what he was doing. He made no solid strides with the company. He way overpaid for Joseph A. Bank. Then he overpays for Joseph A. Bank And he does it, and his whole strategy, the way he rationalized it was, we're going to get Joseph A. Bank, we're going to get synergies going, right? We're going to combine it, lower our costs, and we're going to get rid of Joseph A. Bank's deep discounting model, and we're going to make them work like ours. Okay, well, problem number one, most people don't even know what Joseph A. Bank is. Okay, and I've done this experiment 100 times. Have you heard of Joseph A. Bank? They go, nope. I go, how about buy three suits? Let's try it, Darren. Have you heard of the company Joseph A. Bank?
Yes.
You have heard of it? Why? How'd you have... Dude, you just blew that up. You're supposed to say no.
Oh, I've seen the commercials.
Oh, you've seen the commercials. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Why do you know them?
I don't know what it is.
Okay, you don't know what it is?
No.
Are you familiar with the tagline, buy one suit, get three free?
I probably heard that.
Okay, you just destroyed this whole illustration.
But no, I mean, no, not suits specifically.
Okay, so they haven't been doing as much. You're a little bit younger. They haven't done as much. But back in the day, when I first became a broker, all of us would go to Joseph A. Bank because you'd buy one suit, you get like three free. I mean, they didn't look like Armani suits, right? But you're broke. You're starting off as a broker. You're 23 years old and you need suits.
You're a broke broker.
Yeah, that's kind of funny, isn't it? That's interesting. You know, it's kind of funny, too, the similarities between a fiduciary and a broker. And broke is the main word. Glad I'm not a broker anymore. Anyway, I've done this experiment a bunch of times. Darren obviously just kind of blew it up for me. But I've asked people, do you know what Joseph A. Bank is? They go, no. I go, do you know buy one suit, get three free? Oh, yeah. Okay, so here's the problem. He pays $1.6 billion for a brand and then destroys the brand instantly. Okay, whether it was profitable or not doesn't matter. The question is could the company keep up the financial output if they completely go away from their business model? Everybody knew them as a deep discounter. That's why we went there. Right? It'd be like McDonald's saying, hey, we're still McDonald's. We're just going to stop selling cheeseburgers. Okay, so that's a problem. Sure enough, over the next 2 years, Joseph A. Bank's revenue drops 50%. Shocker. Okay? Then Men's Warehouse had to take a $1.2 billion write-down on the purchase. Just wrote it off the balance sheet. Which was actually a good move. Just take the hit up front, move on. But the CEO just kept making dumb decision after dumb decision. Then all this stuff's going on. And the purchase of Joseph A. Bank was done with debt. So they got $1.6 billion of debt on the balance sheet. And he keeps paying a dividend. When you make a mistake like that and your stock gets pounded, at this time, I think the stock had dropped to like 14 bucks from 65. Why don't you cut your dividend? Well, because we're going to lose shareholders. Dude, your stock dropped from 65 to 14. Retain the dividends and pay off your debt. The plane has hit the side of the mountain. But he didn't do that. Just stupid thinking. So anyway, point is what you're left with is a company that at this point had debt. Now they've got less debt now. It's like 1.1. They've done a good job of paying it off, 1.1 billion. And it catches our eye, and everybody's going, just like they are now, but everybody's sitting there going, oh, they're going bankrupt. Retail is getting taken over by Amazon, you know, all this other kind of... Well, first of all, what is one place that people probably won't buy things on the internet? It's probably suits. I won't. You know, I'm young enough to do that. I grew up on the internet. I'm not buying a suit online. I can't touch it. I can't feel it. I'm a boxy ex-football player. You know, the way a suit fits is really important. I can't get these skinny Euro suits that these guys wear that are in style because it looks like I'm wearing yoga pants. And I look like Chris Farley, you know, like fat guy in a little coat. Remember that? You know, I'll reach over to grab my cell phone and blow out the bicep on the jacket. Anyway, you know, and then you got to get it tailored. And there's this need for bricks and mortar. And then we go, okay, well, if we think that they're immune to the Amazon taking over the retailer, then their revenue stream should have held up a lot better than other retailers like JCPenney. They went out of business a long time ago. Shows how much shopping I do. Thank you, sir. And you know, Nordstrom, right? Well, we looked at their revenue. It was pretty stable. Really hadn't taken the hit that the other retailers had. So that kind of fit our stuff. Then we go look at the underlying information of the company. Okay. It's still producing $3.2 billion of revenue. It's producing $270 million of free cash flow. And when the stock was at 13 bucks a share, the market cap, the total valuation of the company was around $650 million. So you're paying $650 million to get the stock. You're making $270 million a year. Hold it for 3 years, you recover the entire price of making the stock. Now, you've got the debt there, which is part of the enterprise value. But what we're saying there is, you look at that, you know, we talk about price to earnings ratios on the show. You're talking about a price to earnings ratio of 7 or something like that. And that's a value stock. right? It's got negativity built around it. There have been some bad things that have been done. But here in the underlying, you've got Men's Warehouse. You've got Joseph Abboud. You've got K&G and Moores. You still have Joseph A. Bank. I don't think it's worth nearly as much as they paid for it. But the point is you've got assets and cash flow and revenue that are far greater than what the market is pricing the stock at. And it's doing it on the premise that the company's going to go bankrupt. Well, when you have free cash flow of $270 million, you can't go bankrupt. And you're paying down debt. And you're still paying dividends. It just shows how people get this misconception. Okay, so now I'm not going to give any recommendations, but I'll tell you the story. So this scenario that I'm laying out to you happened about 2.5 years ago. We bought the stock right around 13, picked up a little bit more at 10. It kind of bottomed out at 10. We held it. They announced a less than horrible quarter. You know, things had kind of stabilized a little bit. Over the next several months, stock runs up to 30. We're in at about 12, right? We sell it, take a really great profit. It's phenomenal. And why'd we sell it at 30? Because that's through our calculations, we looked at it and said, you know, we think that's what it's worth. Remember, there's bad management, bad decisions going on. It's not a buy and hold investment for us, but it's deeply undervalued. You know, it's like finding a brand new Honda on sale for 12 grand. You know, maybe we're in the middle of a recession. We won't be able to sell it immediately, but somebody's going to pay us 12 grand more for that Honda because it's worth more, right? That's value investing. So then they announce kind of another shaky quarter and the CEO resigns. Stock gets hit again. Now it goes back down to 13 again. Pops on our radar. But this time it's a little bit different. Revenue's down a little bit, but still right up in that $3.2 billion range. Cash flow is stabilized, but they've paid off $400 million of the debt. So now it's only got $1.1 billion of debt. Right? So they announce CEO resigning. Stock gets hit more. And the stock drops all the way down to 8. Now it's at a $400 million market cap, still producing $270 million worth of free cash flow. So we're looking at it going, there's something we must be missing. This is like paying 10 cents for a dollar. It just doesn't make any sense. All the bankruptcy stocks happened again. I go in to listen to some of these interviews of these guys that are telling people, watch out, you know, this company's in trouble, blah, blah, blah. And one interview on TV, one interview on radio, one interview in a big Financial Times write-up. You know, these are guys that know, and they go, what's really killing them is this deep discounting model. You can't make any money when you're giving away suits. And I started laughing. They did away with that discounting model in 2015, which is why the revenue from Joseph A. Bank dried up. Yet these guys are on radio and TV saying this is what's driving the stock down. It's not. It's nonsense. And this is a value setup. Again, I'm not advocating that you buy it. I'm not saying you should. Do not make any actions on the stock on me. If you're interested, call me. And I can advise you one-on-one, but I don't know your situation. And the reason why, if I'm buying a company for $400 million that's making $270 million a year, all I got to do is hold things moderately together for the next year and a half, and I'm going to ROI, return on investment. I'm going to get my money back. All I got to do is hope the company can survive a little bit longer. And like I said, it's making $270 million a year. I'm paying $400 million for the stock. That is value. Does not guarantee it'll work out. That's why I said, don't just buy it. But if those are the kind of insights you're interested in, and less risk, more upside, knowing that you're not just chasing a trend, that we're actually investing with purpose, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. Follow us at Twitter, KYR Radio, at KYR Radio. You can go to Bulwark Management website. And like I said, if it's intimidating to call, you don't want to get roped into a sleazy sales process, you can email us too. Just go to our website, go to contact us, and just shoot us an email. We'll get you the information you're looking for. You can get our free booklet. We want to educate guys, and also reiterate, there is a different way to do things. There are fiduciaries out there like us who are looking out for your best interest that are not just going to throw you in the same portfolio that everybody else is throwing you into. We can leverage your upside, get you way more upside exposure, drastically reduce your risk, and drastically reduce your fees. Or maybe it's just a second opinion. But if you want some of that insight, give us a call. Anyway, we got to run. Hope you guys have a great weekend. We will be back next week for our interview with Larry McDonald. Until then, this is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.